Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm your host, Ron Reardon. I'm joined in the studio by producer Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee. How are you today?
I'm doing great. We're right now in summer for me. I don't know if we're actually, are we actually in summer? It just feels like summer for me.
I think technically, no.
Not yet.
Right.
Still spring.
But temperature-wise, yes.
Good.
That's for certain. Well, Lee, you know, on Launch, we feature innovators, entrepreneurs, and related industries, you know, providing our listeners with the opportunity to learn from both, you know, successes and failures of launching an idea and the journey that follows. This morning, we're featuring Bert Dumars of Newell Rubbermaid. But before we get started, Lee, could you thank today's sponsor?
Our sponsor today is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
Okay. And we'll be discussing social network and interactive marketing efforts at Newell Rubbermaid, and also the how to build communities and culture change at Sharpie and Rubbermaid, Graco and all. But Bert Dumars is the vice president of e-business and interactive marketing for Newell Rubbermaid. Newell Rubbermaid is a global marketer of consumer and commercial products that touch the lives of people where they work, live, and play. And Bert is responsible for directing and coordinating all the e-marketing, e-commerce, and social media marketing initiatives for them. And kind of interesting, before he came to Newell Rubbermaid, he worked for the IRS. So I'm shaking in my boots here. But, if you've ever used the e-file program or gone to the IRS Gov site, then he was the man that coordinated all that. So welcome to the show, Bert.
Oh, thanks for having me, Ron.
Tell you what, you had a long commute here, right?
Yeah, I had to walk across the parking lot.
Okay, that's really something. So, community building efforts. How is that working for you here in 2010?
It's actually working very well. We started back almost 3 years ago with our Graco Baby Products brand in building out our community. And one of the coolest things that happened this year with Graco Baby, which was kind of, it came on the heels of not an event we like, is that we actually had a recall for one of our stroller lines, and it was a pretty big recall, and it made the Today Show and so on. So it was fairly negative, and it was also associated with a competitive brand where they actually had a baby that was killed in their recall event. So we kind of got associated with a very negative one. And what was really interesting about that is not so much the negative side, was that when we were out, this is the first time we actually went out and did the recall on social media, where we actually were giving out information, responding to parents who were obviously fearful and concerned. We wanted to make sure they had the right information and could get help. And our recall was kind of unusual because we actually had a fix and we were going to send them the fix. So we needed them to register for the fix. And what was amazing about it was after we started responding on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and on our website and on our blog, all of a sudden moms started taking the information and carrying it forward for us. And that was where the community stepped in and started informing themselves of what the right steps were to get resolution. And in worst case, if the fix didn't work for you, here was where you called or emailed to get additional support. And so by the next day, we weren't actually saying as much. It was the moms and dads out there who were speaking for us, which was fabulous. That's not easy to make happen. That took really 3 years or almost 3 years of hard work by the brand team and the brand team members of building that community organically over time in many instances, meeting those people face-to-face and really getting to know them. So that was one of our big, big success stories this year on kind of more of a negative, happening. And then we've been building community with Rubbermaid and Sharpie as well. And Sharpie hit a new all-time high for us this year, crossed over 1 million fans or we call likers now on Facebook. And so that community has actually grown very large and vibrant.
Yeah, I remember when the recall came about because I've got twin grandchildren. Oh. So the first thing I did when I saw it, I don't know, on CNN or somewhere, I shot an email to my son saying, do you have one of these, and read this article and all like that, And, turned out that he didn't have that particular product, But, I can understand that, if you had a big base there to start with, that it really grew tremendously, as people were searching for information.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing that, recalls are really, we try to have as few as possible, right? Our goal is not to have recalls. I mean, we want our products to be of high quality. We put our kids in our products, obviously. So the recalls are really kind of a rough experience for us and for the parents who are part of that. But if we can build the community up and we can help them, you know, guide them to the right solutions and right answers and things. And oftentimes recalls are associated with instructions or not following the instructions. So the more information we can put out there on how to, you know, follow the correct instructions in use and putting these things together, the easier it is for the parents. And that recall also was kind of scary for a lot of parents because it was a certain stroller. It was, you know, certain models that were involved. It was a large number, but still not everyone was involved with the recall. So a lot of people heard Graco recall and just assumed whatever product they had
was
recalled. Right. And so that's why there was so much concern and fear, right? And, you know, you just don't know that it's not your product that's involved until you actually go to the website or go to the blog and get the correct information.
Right. Now, how about, like, if there was no social media and this happened, what would be the path of disseminating that information? What would you have had to have done?
So the traditional model for these recalls was pretty much, and we are the first company in this space to have actually used social media as part of the recall process. Right. But traditionally it was put out a press release, make sure your website's ready with all the correct information, make sure your customer service lines are ready to handle the inflow that's going to be huge, the website and customer service, and then duck and cover.
Yeah.
And basically go underground and try and ride out the storm.
Right.
And do as much support as you can, but don't do anything beyond those things, right? And we also, part of the recall process is when parents register, they also get a letter,
right, informing them
that their product has been recalled, and here's the solution or the fix, or here's where you have to bring it back, or whatever the resolution is. But that was typically, then it was the duck and cover, right? Stay right. low and just ride the storm out, and you're not going to win with anybody, so just go. But with social media, it gives you an opportunity to help more parents. And obviously, there's some who are just going to vent. They're upset. They've paid good money for this product. They don't expect any recalls, and the recall happened, and they're upset. And those people, you try and help them, and if you can't, you just got to say, well, we did our best, and you have to let them.
So when you're in social media now, obviously the lifespan of this conversation is going to be a lot longer because they're going to talk about it more than if you were just going to release your press release and then kind of duck and cover.
Well, you know, actually, the duck and cover causes the conversation to go on longer because you're not responding, and then the rumors and the myths and the non-factual information carries on. So, or the information that, well, Graco really doesn't care carries on. But the fact that we were out there and we were taking it, and we took some angry parents, some pretty strong language from them. But at least we took it, and we understand that we're not going to make everyone happy, and especially in these situations. But by being responsive and showing that you care enough to be out there, that goes a long way. And a lot of parents will say, well, Graco did not intend this, and we did not intend this.
Sure.
But we did the best we could to resolve it.
And then were the people who own the product, were they then speaking out for you, like defending you? Were you finding instances of that?
We found kind of a combination of things. One was that, you know, parents who had been long-term Graco customers were pretty happy with the response. They were happy that someone showed enough care to actually respond to them. And number two was for people who did have issues, like they got the fix. The fix was kind of a wrap around the hinge of for the stroller.
Right.
If they got the fix and for whatever reason it didn't work for them, then we responded again and we said, okay, well, in that instance, we're going to take care of you. Here, call our customer support line. They will work with you on, you know, getting you a new product or getting you a refund or whatever it is we need to do to help
you.
So I think, you know, taking all those steps, Graco did an amazing, you know, job in really showing the carrot. And then, and you can kind of see in the volume spiked on the day of the recall.
And this is volume of people talking about it?
Talking about it, concern, you know, response to us, right? Getting information from us, you know, getting the fix, signing up for the fix. And then you could see within a day or two, it just dwindled down.
To the regular numbers?
Back to normal, as normal as it can be. Which was a good thing, which is actually a good sign. And then we just respond in a more normal fashion to people who still have concerns or running into problems.
Now, on the run-up of this, was this something that the heads of the company are going, look, we know this is going to happen. Are we going to do this through social media? Was there much debate about that? Or was there kind of like, look, we've been doing social media for 3 years. Of course we're going to do it this way.
There's always debate because the legal team who is, you know, out to avert risk, I mean, they're concerned. Right, because they want to make sure everyone who's going to be responding has all the right information, is pointing people the right direction, and doesn't say anything incorrect, right? Because if you say incorrect things, that can lead to liability issues. So they were, and our Graco team is well trained, and since they've been doing it for such a long time, they understand the do's and the don'ts. So there was, and we did know this was coming because the federal government says when you have to do a recall. So you get a few weeks to prep for it because you do need to prep, right? Because you got to have all the processes in place to support it
and fix the problem.
Right, and fix the problem, but have the fix available, have enough of the fixes available. And get that out there. And one of the best things the Graco team did was this, we always talk about everyone wants to have a viral video. Well, we had a video that went viral that we created, and it was very straightforward. It showed, it was a video done that showed the stroller that was in the recall, what the problem was, here's the fix, and how to implement the fix. And the fix is very, it was just a wrap. It was like a little wrap around the hinge. So it was a very simple fix. But that video had thousands of views and actually did more to alleviate concern than almost anything else we did because it was visual, it was easy to watch, it wasn't too long, and it was factual. And factual in a recall is the best thing you can do.
Right.
And there's nothing like a visual for people to say, oh, that's it, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
And how to fix it. Now, you mentioned the 1 million likers, for Sharpie.
Yeah.
And, before the show started, you were talking about how artists use Sharpies. Could you share that with our listeners?
Sure. So Sharpie's social media program is built on not so much showcasing our product, but showcasing what people do with our product. So it's all about showcasing artists and designers. We have some people that have done some amazing work. We have people that do beautiful, you can call them paintings, but they're done with Sharpie markers. Or, obviously Lamborghini Gallardo, which a lot of people, well, not everyone knows about, but someone took a white Lamborghini and used Sharpie pens and did all kinds of beautiful artwork on the white Lamborghini with Sharpie, and then they clear coated it, painted over the top of it to lock it in. So, and they showcase that vehicle all over the country. They go to different events that when you look at it, it's on YouTube and it's on Google, and they're showcased everywhere. That's kind of fun. And then there's an artist named Bowie who does styrofoam cups, very simple styrofoam cups. But he sells those for anywhere from $150 to $450 a cup. And he actually has videos of him doing the art on YouTube. And they're beautiful. I mean, just beautiful. I mean, he turns a basic white styrofoam cup into a work of art. And, you kind of go from that high-end stuff to kind of the basic everyday. And I think his name is Lunchbag Dad. And he does Sharpie art for his kids every day of school. He draws on their lunch bags and on the sandwich bags, just some fun art. And he takes a photo of it, puts it on Flickr and Facebook and a few other places, and tweets about it and such. And it's not it's not brilliant art, but it's beautiful in its own way. And it's something he does for his kids that's unique every day, right?
Yeah, that's incredible because, I can't even draw stick figures. And I'm more of a casual user of the Sharpies. I think I probably got, five different colors, the little minis and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember reading years ago that there's no such thing as a money problem, just an idea challenge. And when I think about styrofoam cup and an artist, using a Sharpie and selling, the cup for whatever, it reminds me of when my wife and I went to Mexico and we're at this artist community town. And there's this lady that got little chips of marble that were thrown away by the marble company. And she was an artist, and she would paint on these little chips, okay? And she was selling the chips with her artwork on it. Yeah. And I'm like, she's taking a free product, putting some paint on it, and selling it. And that's real akin to this fella taking a styrofoam cup, which how much does that cost?
Yeah.
And a Sharpie, which is also inexpensive. And creating something of value that the people will purchase. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. And Sharpies aren't just used for art. Sharpies are used for you could say they're more practical purposes. Sometimes there's people use them obviously to they use them to repair furniture, for shoes. I know women who have every color of Sharpie so they can actually knock out scuffs in their shoes when they get those. So. Sharpies are used for a lot of different things, and really that's what we're showcasing is all these different uses, and I call it the infinite number of uses because we just never know. Someone comes up with a new use all the time. They tell us how they use it for this or that. I mean, when we showcased a woman who uses them to dye wigs, I mean, I wouldn't have come up with that in a million years, but this woman did, and it was very well done. They look fabulous. A couple high school kids bought white outfits. and then detailed their white outfits so they were completely unique at their high school prom. It was really cool, well done, very classy, and we showcased them on the blog. And who would have thought someone would have bought, you know, prom outfits and decked them out with Sharpies, and they did.
That's amazing. You know, my wife's a project manager, and whenever she's starting a project, she gets a whole bunch of Post-it notes and a whole bunch of Sharpies, and, you know, people are putting their ideas, and this has to happen, and then that ties to this, and, you know, puts the entire project together.
Yeah.
And Sharpies are an integral part of that.
I mean, isn't that amazing? Because project management, which is core to almost everything we do in business, right, which is a core function and skill, and, yeah, and when it gets back down to it, the easiest way to really set up a project is, yeah, Sharpies and some Post-its and a whiteboard, and then that includes another brand, Expo, right? And Expo,
right,
to draw the lines between them,
right,
and Sharpie to actually write the actual activity,
right?
And then you put your calendar and you're done. You got your Gantt charts on the board.
That's amazing. So what's different between what you're focusing on now in this space and what you were doing back in 2009?
Oh, between this year and that last year?
Right.
Has there been any changes? Is there new technology, or you're just using the same technology differently?
We're doing a lot more measurement now than even we were doing last year. So I think it's more diving into what's going on. One of the things that I've got going right now, I actually have two interns out of the University of Georgia, and I have a full-time employee out of the University of Georgia. Also, I have three from my University of Georgia corner, out of the New Media Institute there. And we're having them do some deep dives on some of our brands. So they did a deep dive on Calphalon. They're just about done with a deep dive on Sharpie. They're actually digging in to find, you know, where are places where we haven't really done much with the community. What new opportunities are there out there? We're going to do one with Goody as well, just kind of diving in on that brand. And we're finding some really interesting things. There's one we just ran across, which we haven't participated in, and it's coming out of Europe, and it's called Secret Wars. And you're going, Secret Wars, what the heck is that? Sounds like something really violent. But actually, it's interesting. They actually they pick a location. It might be a bar or some sort of a restaurant or something. And they select a wall. And on that wall, they paint it white. And then they bring an artist. And there's a competition. And the artist can only use black. So they can use paint, or they can use Sharpie markers, or things like that. And then they do art. And then it's voted on, and the winner gets a prize, you know, a money prize. But then the art is then permanent in that location. So now they've got art that's been developed for that location. So it's called Secret Wars, and we're trying to learn more about it. It seems really interesting. But that's sort of an underground movement for, you know, a younger audience. And that's the kind of stuff we're trying to figure out. Is that important to us? Is it not? I'm not sure. I mean, we're still learning.
Right.
But cool things like that are going on. We're trying to learn more and more. So as we kind of explore what our brands are being used for, or where the potential for our brands use, that's something that the deep dive is going into. Because kind of like the stuff, like the cool things like the Lamborghinis and the artworks by Bowie and stuff, that's fairly we can spot that pretty easily. It's kind of digging in below that and finding out where kind of new things are coming up is always a little
and
difficult.
And then when you do that, you don't know what's going to be something that's going to have legs and then something that's just kind of a fad and disappears.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you don't. And so what we're trying to figure out then, is it big enough? I mean, another thing that we started digging into was, and I have a personal kind of thing in this, is homeschooling. So my sister homeschools her kids, and there's a lot of work, a lot of blogs and talk about, you know, teaching your kids art and science in homeschooling. Well, art and science, and they even talk about Sharpies and how you use Sharpies for some science projects, how you use Sharpies for some homeschooling art projects. So is that a market we should be doing more of, because homeschooling is growing in the United States?
And art programs are disappearing.
Yeah, and art programs at schools are disappearing. So what should we participate more? Should we be more active? Another area, obviously, that's really growing fast is environmentalism. And we are actually a part of it. There's a site called TerraCycle, and you can actually recycle Sharpie pens, Sharpie Expo Papermate pens. And it's kind of a volunteer program. And you become part of a crew, but it's pretty easy to do, and you just set up a box and you put all the pens
in there, and then ship it back to them.
Well, no, actually, we ship it to TerraCycle, and TerraCycle figures out how to reuse them or how to recycle them. You know, there's a program for either or.
Yeah, when you look at the demographics of who's using social media, is it pretty much, you know, folks that are 30 and under, or, you know, are some of the old fossils in there also?
Oh, it's broadening. In fact, yeah, I was going to say the people over 60 are one of the fastest growing segments in social media, and on Facebook and on
and they're heavy users once they get in there.
Oh,
they're on there all the time.
Well, you kind of see where it's where technology is finally being made available to kind of two ends of the spectrum. So it's sort of funny, like the new iPad by Apple. So I don't know that Apple knew this. Maybe they did. They're not saying. But the two biggest users that it is completely intuitive to are people under the age of 6 and people over the age of 60. The iPad is like native for those people. It works for them. They learn it really quickly. In fact, there's a video, YouTube video on that talks about a woman. She's 99 years old, and the iPad changed her life because she has glaucoma and her sight has been diminishing and deteriorating. She is someone who writes limericks, and she loves to read. And, you know, things like the Kindle aren't bright enough for her to see. She can't, the big screen's not big enough. But the iPad, it's big enough and it's backlit, so she can get the fonts large enough so she can see them. So she's now reading again. She's writing again because of the way it works. And she was able to pick it up in a matter of minutes as someone who's 99 years
right.
old.
And usually a lot of them are afraid of technology. They don't embrace it, and then you get somebody. It's so intuitive; they can just play with it. Is that the video? What was it? Grandma gets an iPad.
Yep, Grandma gets an right. iPad, and it's an amazing yeah. video. And it's amazing from the point of view of, if you go back to kind of, you know, sort of when you're trying to develop something new, usability is key, right? Usability is almost the ultimate factor in some ways. And sure. this is completely functional and usable for her, someone who's 99. And then they've also have videos on there. You can see like a 3-year-old using an iPad. And they just like pick it up, they start using it, it just makes sense to them the way it works. They don't have to worry about a keyboard, they don't have right. to worry about a mouse, they don't have to try it. There's no coordination, right? The coordination is all on the screen, and you just move things around with your fingers.
Right.
So think about that. That's pretty intuitive for most folks.
I have to check that out. I'm what you know, known as a late adopter. I always wait
yeah,
for
Yeah, Ron's not an early adopter. He has to wait 5 years.
Yeah, I finally got an iPhone a couple months ago, and I absolutely love it. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was a BlackBerry user for a gazillion years, and that iPhone just, you know, blew me away.
I know. So usability is really key. And so I think, you know, as we look at our products, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
How do we make them more usable? How do we make them easier to understand, easier to use, easier to immediately come up and become an expert in?
Right. And available to those, you know, burgeoning markets that are out right. there.
Yeah. And I think that's why we're doing this deep dive, because we're trying to figure out, where are these opportunities, right? Where are places where we're not hitting it? So you can do mass marketing, and we have this, I consider a beautiful new Sharpie ad. It's really cool. It's like, what would the world be like without creativity? What would the world, you know, in some ways, what would the world be out without Sharpies to make creativity, if you look at the ad, which is really interesting, which is really cool. So diving into that, what does that mean? Where are all these creative opportunities? And where are places where we're not talking to them? Or we're not exposing that to other people. So I think that's kind of where social media allows you to expose and share and show you care. And I think that's where we're trying to figure out.
Yeah, it always amazes me how people end up using products, you know, like the Sharpie for things that you never envisioned. Okay, it kind of reminds me, you know, because when you talked about dyeing hair and, you know, things like that, reminds me of a cartoon I saw once where the inventor of the wheel, Og the caveman, is walking along and he sees a group of people around a table. And he looks over there, and they've turned his wheel that he used for transportation into a roulette wheel. And the caption was, "Og not intend wheel to be used like this." You know, but you invent something, and then you start marketing it for one purpose, and people figure out something else.
But that's a good lesson for the people out there that are the inventors, that in their head they may see things a certain way. Like when Sharpie first started, wasn't the primary use for autographs? That was one of the main uses of Sharpies.
Sharpie started back in 1964. So permanent markers, I mean, really it was for packages, right?
Right.
For packages and for storage. I mean, you think about back then, we didn't have personal computers, so. What'd you use? You got some, you know, stick-on labels, and you could use Sharpie so you could permanently put on a label. So that's, you know, and permanently put labels on packaging and things like that for UPS.
Right.
So kind of that's where, you know, more of a warehouse, kind of industrial in some ways, right? And now with all the colors, proliferation of colors and pen tips and, you know, all the different things we have. In fact, the fact we have not only markers but pens, the market for Sharpies keeps expanding.
It's amazing. Well, when you look at Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, I mean, do you see any new tools or new opportunities for your brands in social network marketing?
Yeah, and this is something I think that's kind of evolving as well. So Facebook, Facebook, by sheer volume, even with all the negative noise out there about it right now, by sheer volume, it's still growing. It's probably, the estimates right now, we know it's above 425 million people on it. It's probably closer to 500 million at this point. And even with all the privacy concerns, which I think is kind of, it's a good, you know, tug back and forth between privacy concerns and what Facebook needs to do. And I think it's good that they're actually being pushed. But the next step is, with all these people on there, you kind of have to be there. As a brand. And if you look like we, almost every one of our brands has a space on Facebook at this point. Not all of them are very active, but they're there and they're ready. Procter & Gamble, another company that we benchmark, is also has all their brands there on Facebook. And many brands are there. And I think it's because that's the place where you're going to interact with your consumers. And one of the reasons we're there is that consumers are now spending almost as much time there as they are on TV. I mean, it's kind of, it's edging in that direction. So it's a place of consumption, of interaction, of, you know, learning about brands, and they show that they like them or they're fans of them by actually giving us the like. So that one's really interesting just from a pure volume. It may be the first social network that hit 1 billion people. Don't know. Could possibly do that. Twitter is also interesting because where Facebook, and I think Facebook's going to change this, where Facebook, the content is really kind of locked down to Facebook. Twitter, the content is public, right? So they don't necessarily even have to follow you directly to have access to your content. So we find Twitter kind of, that's sort of on the public side, and it's all searchable by Google. And the fact that Twitter, the entire Twitter stream, the public stream, is being categorized and cataloged by the Library of Congress is really interesting.
I saw that.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. Foursquare is one that I'm getting active in. I even have like a little Foursquare addict sticker in my cube over there at Newell Rubbermaid, and trying to learn more about where there's potential opportunity for us. I mean, it might be more on the sponsorship side because we don't necessarily have like restaurants or stores ourselves, right? So, and Foursquare is a geolocation type of a gaming solution. So trying to figure that one out and where we might be able to participate there in the future. Right now, not so much, but maybe in the future that will be something for us. I mean, they're all kind of going that way with Facebook and Twitter doing the same thing. But Facebook and Twitter today don't have the game mechanics that Foursquare has.
So. Right. That kind of added a twist to it that I think people like.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be easier for Facebook to add a gaming component if they wanted to.
I'm sure it will. But is it the same?
Right. And that's the thing. But how many things can you do?
Like, yeah.
Are you going to do Facebook, Twitter, and 20 things? Or there'll be 5 core things you do? Or
yeah. What I think is really interesting, and that's the interesting discussion, is what do we do? Where are branded web properties going to go in the future? Manufacturing websites like ours. Sharpie.com, we need to make it more part of the community. And right now we haven't done that as much. We have Sharpie Uncapped, which is our community site. We have the Sharpie blog, but we haven't made Sharpie.com, which is really the brand's home, a part of the community yet as much as we could, as much as we should. Several of the other brands are in the same boat. And so we're trying to think, what is the next phase for our websites? And one of the things that I'm looking back at, and this is more of a technology play, is the next version of HTML, HTML5, where does that come into play in this thing? And the reason I bring that up is because today a lot of our sites are flash heavy. And being flash heavy makes them heavy to load. And we know a lot of consumers, or more on the technical side, don't necessarily like that. But it also makes them a little more difficult to search. And they aren't mobile capable as much. So, for instance, the iPhone, the fact that they aren't supporting Flash
at all, right?
Right, makes it difficult for iPhone people to go to our websites.
And your web, although it's not just your website, there's
lots of websites. Yeah, thousands, hundreds of thousands, not millions of websites are Flash heavy. So, how do we evolve to this next generation, which is HTML5, which allows all the audio, the video, the imagery, but is also much lighter weight, easier to search, easier to, becomes native to a mobile environment like the iPhone or the iPad or whatever next generation, because there's a whole lot of new, pad-type computers coming out here very soon. So that's I think that's where we have to, how do we do that, and then how do we make sure that's integrated in the community, all the community efforts that we're doing,
right?
Pulling those all together. So I think that's our next phase.
Now, how do you feel as a corporation? Do you feel like you're the leading in this area, or you're kind of on par with everybody else? What do you see out there amongst the competition? Or you don't pay attention to that?
No, I do. I do. I look a lot. I think that we're doing the appropriate things for our brands, and we're moving at the pace that's comfortable for our company. And I think every company moves at their own pace. I think for technology firms, mm-hmm. they're moving much faster. You know, if you look at Dell, if you look at Intel, you know, even Microsoft, and you know, and surprisingly enough, the one that isn't moving very fast, which is Apple. Everyone thinks Apple's like the social media superstar. Well, they aren't,
right?
Because the only one who does social media at Apple is Steve Jobs. You know, it's a one-person social media, and you know, and he does it at his own right. pace, right?
But they're making the devices that everybody's playing with,
right? Mm-hmm. But they appear to be heavy social media users, which they aren't. But you see a lot of the technology guys kind of sitting out there, and they're doing quite a bit. And you see the next set, I think, is the retailers, right? Because they have to engage with their consumers,
right?
Because otherwise they're going to lose them. So you see what Best Buy is doing. Walmart's been very experimental, far more, I think, than anyone realizes.
Right.
Target, you know, a whole lot of the retailers. And then the manufacturers like us. And we're doing a lot to keep, you know, focusing on brand building, right? Because at the end of the day, they're going to buy their products from Walmart or Target or Amazon or Home Depot or Lowe's. They're not going to buy direct from us. We want to make sure that when they walk in the doors or when they go to their e-commerce sites that they prefer our brands over anything else.
Right.
Well, you gave me this chart that shows, you know, all your different brands that Newell Rubbermaid and that they're on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube.
Uh-huh.
So how do our listeners connect, you know, with all of this?
Well, so today each brand, because each brand is going after a specific customer segment today, it's if you're interested in Graco Baby and you're a new parent or a current parent and you have kids and you're planning having kids, then Graco Baby would be a great place. Start at the website, and from there you can go to the blog, you can go to our Facebook page, YouTube, Flickr. Actually, the Graco Baby Flickr is pretty cool. Lots and lots of photos there. And that's one of the first ones they started with. But it go brand by brand, and that's typically where we say go to Rubbermaid.com or to the Rubbermaid blog.
Is this chart somewhere online?
No, it's not. It's not right now. We're still kind of figuring out where's the right place to kind of pull things together. We, from a branding perspective, we brand our brands, right? Rubbermaid, Sharpie, sure. and Graco, and so on. We don't focus on NewellRubbermaid.com.
Right.
NewellRubbermaid.com is for Wall Street. It's an investment brand from that perspective. But from a consumer perspective, they don't really know about it, and we don't necessarily care if they know about it.
Right.
We want them to know about Rubbermaid, Sharpie, Papermate, and so on.
Whatever you're interested in.
Right. So really that's where they kind of start the engagement model. We know a lot of people do searches on Facebook, and that's how they're finding us. They also do the searches on Google, and that's how they find us. And typically our blogs and our social media efforts show up pretty high in our searches.
Okay, well, thanks for being on our show today, Bert. Our listeners have really gotten some great nuggets about all the different products that you guys provide there at Newell Rubbermaid.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Okay. Well, another great show, Lee.
Special thanks to today's sponsor, Patents & More, your trusted guide through the innovation jungle.
And tune in each week at this same time to listen live or go to our website at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen at your convenience. Until next week, I'm Ron Reardon with our producer, Lee Cantor, signing off another great session of Launch.